and I'm more about doing. I'd rather do 10 things and fail 9 times and succeed once than keep thinking about doing, because I just can't.
Hey everyone, Gordon here. Thanks for joining us on the Get Stuff Done podcast. If you're with us for the first time, a very warm welcome. If you're a regular listener, well, thanks so much for coming back. You found your way to the How to Get Stuff Done series. In this series, through our guests' experiences and sharing of their insights, we learn how they get stuff done, how they have got to where they are today by sharing some of their techniques and strategies for doing so. I hope you find it both interesting and insightful, but also practical at the same time. Now let's see who our guest is today. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Get Stuff Done podcast. I'm your host, Gordon Dudley, and I'm delighted to welcome another international guest to the podcast today, Arno Peppercorn. He is currently the Chief Talent Officer at Omnicom Media Group, which is an international media marketing communications company based out of New York. But Arno is based in the Netherlands, where he is from. And Arno has been recognized for his commitment to advancing diversity and inclusivity in the workplace over his career that has spanned a couple of decades. He is also the co-founder of Include Now, a foundation that advocates for creating inclusive environments and celebrating diverse perspectives. And so I think that he has a lot of perspectives and good insights to bring to us when it comes to getting stuff done, working as he is with people in international organizations. So Arno, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
It's Friday the 13th, and for the superstitious viewers and subscribers, they might be thinking that this is rather an auspicious day, but it's almost essentially the last, or maybe the second to last Friday before the Christmas break. Is this a very busy time of year for you, or is this a quiet time of year for you?
Well, that's a good question, because it depends on which personality of my personalities you ask. So my private personality is quite busy, because obviously there's all these holidays and celebrations, and you need to do stuff in the month of December. Business wise, it's basically like a traffic jam. Everything needs to happen in 2 weeks in December, basically, because the last 2 weeks is holidays. Okay. So yeah, but I have decided to stop using the word I am busy a long time ago, so I have enough to do, but that's what they pay me for, so that's all right.
I like that. I think that these days I'm so busy is almost a badge of honor. I think a lot of people want to be busy. It's almost proof that they are valuable and that they have a lot to do, but ultimately that's just a matter of prioritization, right? Deciding what you do and don't do. So I like your take on that. Enough to do. So tell me, Chief Talent Officer of Omnicom Media Group, what does that entail in a high level kind of picture?
Oh, yeah. In one sentence, it's creating an environment where talent can thrive. That's the challenge that I've took upon myself, obviously given to me by the Omnicom Media Group in Holland. That is in a nutshell what we try to do. And there's a couple of reasons why we're trying to do it, but that's about it, yeah.
And what would you say, are there, you've worked with several organizations throughout your career, and I'm sure you've experienced very different company cultures. Are there things that you can see in your present role where you're trying to make, you know, trying to encourage the people to thrive that are, it's already easier to do so, or things which alternatively maybe are very challenging around doing that? What's your take on that?
Well, I think my main challenge is to innovate with human beings. And, you know, a lot of innovation, especially also in our industry, is focused on either technology, or that could be software technology, that could be AI technology, the likes of those. But it's very rarely that you try to create a human innovation path, and that makes it very touchable for individuals. So they can, you know, the positive people can feel what is going to happen and why you're doing what you're doing. But in every change or project or vision project, there's always a group of people who don't like it. And that's where the friction starts, because if you innovate on a, let's say, software level, if people don't like it, then they don't like the software. But if you start innovating in a human space, then it becomes very more about feelings and emotions and tiptoeing around, are we using the right language? Are we using the right words? Do we know where we want to go and how we're going to get there without damaging people and uplifting individuals? So it's a very challenging path. Especially not so much in the fact that we are a big international company, because I'm really focused on Holland. But it's also the type of industry that we are in that is very short term from what we do on a daily basis. Okay. And you have to look beyond the horizon to see where you want to go. And that is a challenge sometimes, because my role is creating an educational platform, and now education will not pay off tomorrow, and everything that we basically touch will pay off tomorrow. So there is a gap between what we are doing and where we want to make a difference.
And you mentioned the space that you're in. Obviously, it's creative industries. It's innovation that is not about technological research. It's about, you know, really finding out what consumers want and how your clients can deliver that better. So what is it that does that present a bigger challenge to you as Chief Talent Officer, or is it almost like you're given the mandate to be a true Chief Talent Officer because your company recognizes that people are your core asset?
Well, we're trying to convince a lot of people that people are our core assets. So,
okay.
I do honestly believe that you know, Omnicom has it in her hearts and minds to be good with people and for
okay.
people. But we try to raise the bar a little bit there and really recognize individuals as being talented. And that's because a lot of companies talk about, you know, people first and we look after our people. But if you look at facts, then the burnout ratio, especially in the age group 20 to 30, is not decreasing. It's very much increasing. Mm-hmm. And if you don't recognize that as a challenge, as a company, then I think you will lose, because, you know, we do have great data sets, we have fantastic technology, but I personally believe that at the end of the day, the true differentiator to be relevant for clients and consumers, because basically we are coming up with ideas to sort of make a consumer fall in love with a brand, then you need to have a reflection of society in your thinking, doing, and in your output. So the investments in human beings and best human capital is for me, it's basically a no-brainer. Yeah.
And where did your thinking about this come from? How long ago did you go on this path to want to be a chief talent officer, if you like, or at least be the person who's taking on this challenge?
Yeah, well, there's a clear reason for it. When I had my first job, I had IDs, and when I went with those IDs to the more senior levels within my company, they said, you better shut up and work for 5 years. Do what we always have been doing, and this is what you have to do, and do this for 5 years, because blah, 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 blah. All the, I call it old white man bullshit. And they didn't even have the guts to listen to the ID. Mm. Now, I'm not saying that all my IDs were perfect, but at least I would have expected the respect and the recognition from management to listen to IDs. Yeah. So that's when I decided that if I were to make it in my career and make it to a place where I can make a difference on that level, then I would. Now, obviously, I had no clue that I would be called chief talent officer, because honestly, I don't give a rat's ass about titles.
Okay.
But especially international, it resonates. But you can, you know, a title is just a title. It's what I'm entitled to do. that interests me.
Yeah. Okay. So it was pretty early on that you felt that there was some work to be done. I think for me, it took longer. I think I'd been working for a good 10 years before I, in that time, I was just constantly thinking, I want to do business. I want to do deals. I want to be at the forefront. I want to bring in revenue.
Yeah.
And it at some point I realized, well, it doesn't matter if we don't have the right people to do what we want to do, we're not going to be able to do it. And so I kind of almost came like a full circle back to like people first. And I know you said that was a cliche that people use, but that's what I kind of realized. And that was now almost 10 years ago. And that's when I then set up my company to try to do something a bit different in Korea, because in Korea, where I've been for the last 14 years, title is everything.
Yeah.
Title is the door opener to allow you to talk to the person you want to talk to, in a funny kind of way, and people kind of even internalize that. Oh, I remember when we were asking a company, this was an international professional service company, we were like, you know, what kind of professional training do you think that you need? And we were kind of going down the levels, and a junior manager was asked what kind of training they might need. And probably some advanced Excel would be useful for them in their role. And their response was, oh, but I'm only a junior manager. I'm not ready for advanced Excel. So the mindset that they Yeah. would not even want to have the highest level of training that they possibly could was ingrained in their level and their title, that kind of like, you know, it's the ultimate inbox thinking.
Yeah.
I hope you're enjoying this episode. I just wanted to remind you to click subscribe if you haven't done so yet. By subscribing and following the podcast, you'll get each and every episode automatically pop up on your playlist every week, so you won't miss any. Thank you so much for being with us. Now let's get back to our guest. So is that something that you come across when you're dealing, because you have multiple regions, multiple countries that you're responsible for, but within one organization, is that something that you come across, and how do you deal with that?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm just responsible for the Dutch market, so that's
okay.
That's very important to
to
state. Otherwise, my colleagues will call me up and say, "What? You're not responsible for my region?" well, I should be though, but I'm not.
that's a call that's going to come too.
Yeah, let's see what it podcast will be. It's Friday the 13th, after all. I come across that being taken serious is often related to the age of an individual, The sex of an individual, so the color of an individual,
yeah,
and the number of years you've been working. And that's I totally disagree with that fact, but that's a fact that I see.
Yeah.
And if you want to truly elevate your business, then you have to realize that ideas and visions and different ways of thinking can come from any part of your organization. And if you're only saying, yeah, my door is always open, and having meetings with senior management to come up with ideas and new visions, then I think you're misusing the people that you have within your company. Because and that has to do with leadership and organizing, and basically the title of your podcast, getting things done throughout every layer of the organization without, this is a difficult word for me, hierarchy thinking. Is that
hierarchical
in English?
Yes.
So I find it very interesting that that's not happening throughout every company.
It's funny, because there are two extremes, and I'll always remember having come from one of the most hierarchical organized places, hearing some colleagues working for Scandinavian companies, and they were telling me actually they're incredibly frustrated because their flat hierarchy is so there's so much, you know, equality, that actually they struggle to get anything done. They want to have a decision by their senior management on something, but it goes up and it goes back down. And until there is full consensus, they're not having anything done. So of course, there's two sides to every situation, and having a balance, and probably also in some circumstances, you know, it does make sense to have a little bit more command and control. And in other circumstances, you know, very much consensus-based, free and open. And you know, of course, the difficulty for any one organization is where it's best to have that particular structure. You mentioned about the title of the podcast, Getting Stuff Done. How do you, as Chief Talent Officer with your team, how do you go about making sure that you get stuff done?
All right. Well, basically, step one is realization who you are as an individual. So I suck at getting stuff done. I'm just really good at coming up with ideas and bringing them from one to three.
Okay.
And with that realization, I always surround me with people who can do stuff that I can't. So I have no planning skills. I have no project management skills. I just really much into, we're going to go in that direction. And I think if we do this, this, and this, then we're going to make it. And I have a great right-hand person within my organization that picks my brain and puts it into decks and planning schedules. And with her capability to do that, and with my capability to think outside of the box, we get stuff done.
Okay.
And
teamwork.
Yeah, that's one. And the second part that I've learned that is very important is stop talking and simply do. Yeah. So prior to this, I've been an entrepreneur. I had my own company. Companies back in the day, and the only reason we got from A to B is by doing it. And I see a lot of people just going into rooms, coming up with decks and ideas and budget schemes and business plan and a mission, a vision, a strategy, blah blah blah, and they do jack shit. Yeah. And I'm more about doing that. I'd rather do 10 things and fail 9 times and succeed once, then keep thinking about doing, because I just can't. I really can't.
So it sounds like in that, what you mentioned about just getting started and trying something, for a lot of people, that's risky. It's perceived as, you know, that's why they want to make the perfect plan. So what is it that gives you the, I don't know, confidence, authority? Where is it that you realize that that is the best way to go about things?
Yeah, that's a very tricky question, Gordon.
Okay.
In business life, I'm extremely confident that okay. if I, because I, like I told you, I know what I can't do. So I know exactly what I'm not capable of doing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole lot of things that I can't do, but I know exactly what I can do. And I can elaborate on that towards people, teams, companies, etc. And then I get it done. And that has to do with confidence, vision, self-reflection. So it's not that, you know, I think of something in the morning that I will immediately start doing a minute later, but I just go really fast inside of my brain, checking boxes. Can it be successful? And if I really think it is, then I write it on one piece of paper. I test it with 5 to 10 people and say, this is where I want to go. What do you think? And if they say, yeah, it's a good idea, maybe you should blah, 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 then I do it.
That's interesting.
And I don't know where it comes from, because as a human being, I'm not that self-confident. But business-wise, okay. I'm doing all right.
Yes. And I will say, just to let everybody know how we first met, we were at an HR conference just a few weeks ago in London, and it was a round table, and it was a relatively, how can I say, intimate round table. I think there were about 10 of us in a room, so like around a table in a room, so it was not like panel and audience, and we were having just some really good discussions, and I could feel that your perspectives perhaps were slightly different to maybe others, even though those others were also representing large corporates. And so it's interesting that you mention about that difference between your kind of corporate persona and your personal one, because everything about you also seems to exude confidence as well. So tell me, you mentioned about your entrepreneurial background. Tell me a little bit about that journey and what made you decide to follow that path.
Well, I basically had two companies. So the first one was back in 2003. Mm-hmm. We had a company in mobile phone accessories.
Okay.
And that's a really funny story, because I learned a lot back then. And so we acquired the patents for one of the products, imported stuff from China,
uh-huh.
and built a import-export network throughout Europe.
Okay.
Now, this device was enabling you to wear your mobile phone on your wrist. And there comes the funny part, because that was back in the day when all the phones were getting smaller and smaller. If you were, you know, and when you went to the beach, then you were not wearing any clothing, then it would be perfect to wear your phone on the wrist. And then, I don't know.
But before the smartwatch era, of course.
Before this one, because if you wear this on your wrist,
not gonna happen.
So basically, another small entrepreneur called Steve Jobs.
Oh yeah,
basically fucked up my company. But you know, in all fairness, I was really young, and just the experience of traveling through Europe and making business deals with different countries and different people and different companies was really, really a learning experience. And then I went back to work for companies, and I started working as an entrepreneur again in 2012, I think, when I became the co-owner of a recruitment firm specialized in marketing and media. And within that firm, we also started a small investing label where we invested in digital startups, where we did basically two things: invest money and build teams from the inside out. And with my commercial team building background, that was something that I could easily do. And we also founded a educational platform to train young people on the sole subject of programmatic advertising.
Okay.
So yeah, that was really great to do it. And being an entrepreneur is something that is, you know, I really believe that I will be an entrepreneur forever, but I just don't care who pays me my money at the end of the month.
Well, here's my take on it. It's not about being an entrepreneur or not being an entrepreneur. It's about being entrepreneurial.
Exactly.
And so you right now, you might be with one of the largest media marketing communications groups in the world, but I'm absolutely certain that you're still very entrepreneurial.
Definitely.
It's that at that particular point in time, you were also being entrepreneurial and you were doing your own business. And so yeah. I think sometimes, especially in social media, we talk about, you know, I'm an entrepreneur of this. But like you say, the fact of the matter is it doesn't matter where the money comes from. And it's also incredibly difficult to start your own thing from nothing. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, and the reason there's a reason why well-established companies are the size they are, because they have some benefits, right? Some economies of scale, whatever it might be, some intrinsic knowledge or capabilities that they can do better than anybody. So yeah, it's an interesting one, because I'm also, having run my own business for the last 8 years, I'm actually very interested in going in-house at this point in time to try to do more, you know,
yeah,
on a established structure with an established network, have the door open to do what I want to do, as opposed to fighting for the chance to do what I want to do.
I can imagine. Yeah, that's a good difference.
Yeah. And so what then, so it's that reason that brought you back to working for large organizations, is it?
No, the honest truth is that I had a great business partner, but when mm-hmm. COVID hit, I really found out we looked differently at the world. And,
okay.
And I knew before, but that sort of made it more obvious. So I already decided in my head that I wanted to do something different. And I really only want to work, I really want to work in making things better for human beings within the working space. That's sort of my thing.
Okay.
And when I had a drink with the CEO of Omnicom in the Netherlands, and we weren't drinking coffee. He was drinking beer and I was drinking wine. And then after four wines, he said, why don't we start talking about you working for me? And I want to build this educational platform, and I believe you're the person to do it. So I laughed in his face and I said, no, I'm an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Then I went to the toilet and I looked in the mirror and I thought, what kind of an ego thing is that to say? So I came back, I said, I really want to talk about it. And that's how it all started. For me, there's one main reason to do it, really make a difference for this 10 to 30 year old and make impact, true human impact on the industry. Mm-hmm. That's one. Two, I'm turning 48 next week and I really want to keep learning. Yeah. Because running my own business was becoming sort of a repetitional thing every day.
Mm-hmm.
Although sometimes working within an organization like Omnicom annoys the shit out of me, because I want to go faster and I can be so confident that I lose people. I'm learning a lot myself in that environment with what I can do to make that impact. So my brain is back on, so to say.
Okay.
And that's, you need your brain until...
You do. You do.
Passion, yeah, so...
And,
yeah.
And I'm glad to hear that it's back on.
Yeah, yeah.
And that you're being challenged. Because, yeah, I mean, I think that's where the greatest learning happens, if you're being challenged, like
yeah.
Otherwise. You learn a lot by doing the things yourself, that kind of trial and error. But there is also so much more to be learned from others.
Yeah.
I'm sure that your current role gives that opportunity. Well, Arno, thank you for sharing all of your insights. I think we're pretty much out of time. I really enjoyed... We covered a lot of different topics, I believe, within that time. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
And if anybody would like to reach out to get in touch with you, what would be the best way to do that?
I like doves.
Doves? Pigeons? Sending...
No, you just put me, find me on LinkedIn.
LinkedIn.
That'd be easier. But I would appreciate a pigeon every now and then. Yeah.
a pigeon for the new year. I mean, I just checked the stats. This podcast is listened to or has been listened to people in more than 50 different countries. Are you ready to receive doves from 50 different countries?
I am. I think my neighbors won't be, but fuck it.
Well, on that note, once again, Arno, thank you so much for joining us. And to everybody who's listened to this episode, I really appreciate you being a part of the Get Stuff Done podcast. If you're not yet a subscriber, you need to get on that. Make yourself a subscriber so you get every new episode coming into your playlist when every new episode comes out. And if you were to be so good as to give us a review, I would also really appreciate that so that we can reach even more people through the Get Stuff Done podcast. This has been your host, Gordon Dudley. And remember, let's get stuff done. And that's another episode of the Get Stuff Done podcast. Thank you so much for being with us. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you'd like to get involved and you have someone who you think would be a good guest for the podcast, please drop me a message and I'll be happy to get in touch. Alternatively, if you would like to share this episode on your social media, that would also be extremely appreciated by us. Thank you so much once again. Remember, let's get stuff done.